Now it's time for very serious football talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. There was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll cop to this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
We're going to have to update the intro to reflect the fact that Seth Kaiser is now a cat owner. And Seth, before you say, no, we don't own a cat. We're just holding a cat in our kitchen right now or whatever. I'm going to tell you, Seth, you have a cat now.
The cat has already been relegated to outside status. I certainly do not have a cat.
I think you have kids, right, Seth? You have kids?
I might have a couple.
Yeah, so whenever you're...
4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
When the things that your kids have, you would say that you have, right? Like, they're, you know, their troubles or their successes or their, like, their clothes, you know, that you've bought. Those are also things that you would say that you have, right?
You know, I think that just depends on what the meaning of the word have, really.
You have a cat, Seth. You have a cat. You're going to pry
there
a kitten?
There is a cat that exists in my general proximity.
You're going to pry a kitten out of the clutching hands of your 1,000 children?
Yes, and I'll smile all the way as I skip down the street. If I were afraid of disappointing my children, well, you know what? I don't want to finish that sentence.
Oh!
Think about it.
I was so ready to just hear whatever it was. How did you get a cat in your house? A kitten, no less. Again, a kitten. It's adorable.
I left the house to have breakfast with a bunch of other pastors, and I came back, and there was a cat in my house.
Oh, so you're saying God put it there?
Yes. Yes. It's like Joan of Arc had the sword dropped to her in the middle of the field. No, so my wife was brushing her teeth or something. She heard a meow.
Oh, it's a stray kitten.
Yes.
Oh,
it was raining, and she took pity on it. Had it been me, I would have said, "Oh, I'm sorry, kitty. That's a bummer for you," and you know, left the room. But
Seth, you have a kitten now. What? Because what else are you gonna do with it? Are you gonna put it out back on the street? There's no way.
There's actually a really a very active eagle and hawk population in the Park Rapids area. And no, I'm kidding. Well, no, we've got a few people that it looks like they're going to be willing to take it. And so,
okay, all right, that's good.
I'm willing to provide a little shelter and protection for the thing for a day or two for the sake of providing it with a nice home.
I guess that works. Beard says there's a good comment that we need to know about. Go, Beards.
Keith says, will his daughter allow Seth to take the kitten away? He better sleep with one eye open.
This is my thought.
I already do every time I don't share my pizza with her. And so the problem with her is she's overplayed her hand. She's revealed who she is far too young. And now I know who against whom I am dealing. And so I'll deal with her. She'll play with the chickens and forget all about that cat. And maybe this will all end in us getting a dog.
You have chickens, but not a cat or dog?
I don't want to talk about pets anymore, Todd. The chickens was an accident thing, too. That was an Easter thing with the church going horribly askew.
Listen,
that was not my fault.
At this point, I imagine that most of your kids were an accident also, and you didn't just send them back out on the streets.
Well, I mean, the ones that I'm raising, no.
Whoa! This is a scandal!
Yeah, good. I'm really excited to hear that, you know, be in the intro. The man who's willing to abandon his children cold-heartedly.
Thanks for voicing it yourself. That makes my job way easier. I don't even have to ask Curtis to do it.
Yeah, I do what I can.
Also, I'd like to know, do you have a large enough computer screen now? Like, are you even, you're, Seth
you know,
is
I
now
think
doing...
your listeners should have some context here.
That's
you're
true.
stalking me, that we're friends on Facebook.
Well, listen, I mean, once I saw it on Facebook, it made me feel bad. Like, oh, now I can't actually talk about that. And he's never going to be able to confront me about how I know so much about what's going on inside of his home. For reasons that I remember.
Yeah. Now I can't confront him. Yes, I do have a big enough computer screen. My wife, for her birthday, just to let the rest of the world how inadequate their lives are, mine is awesomer. My wife, for her birthday, I asked, what do you want? You know, what can we get for you? We went on to a nice dinner. What more would you like? And she said, you know, we've been married 10 years. You've never asked for anything. I would really like if we could get you a big screen TV that you could connect to your computer and do film review on. And I was just like, okay, well, if that's what you really want, I'm willing to do that for you. And so now I'm doing film review on a 55-inch monitor.
All of that is awesome, and that is such a great story. I bet you feel like just a real piece of garbage for not letting her keep that little kitten that she rescued from the cold, hard world.
My son's allergic. Sorry. There's
okay.
No
okay. That's good.
It's a real shame.
That's
a
good
real shame.
I'm glad that you have that in your arsenal to say, oh, listen, I mean, do you want to leave our son in hives?
Exactly. It was literally the first, oh, yeah, but what about Cole? will someone think of the children? That's what I want to know. It's been a very eventful day at the Kaiser household. It just lets me know. I leave the house and, like, I come back and there's baby chickens. I leave the house, I come back and there's a cat. I leave the house, I come back and she's giving birth to two more kids. It's like, it just doesn't stop. And I want it to end, but I don't know how to make it happen.
I've got bad news, I think, about you leaving the house and her giving birth to twins. That one feels like it's going to need to be a longer conversation than we have for the radio segment. The chickens and the kittens and stuff you can explain away pretty easily.
Sure.
She gave birth to two more children, and they were both half Asian. I don't know. We talked about this. You've got some, like, Japanese heritage or something, right?
I do.
We can explain all this away.
Sense. I'm a quarter Japanese.
You're too diverse. You're so diverse that, like, I can't even find a good joke to make about your wife's alleged infidelity that you made a joke about first.
Well, I'm very sorry. I take full responsibility for that. I apologize for ruining your infidelity joke.
It was your infidelity joke that I was then running away with.
That's fair.
All right, thank you. That's all I ask for. The other thing I have written down to talk to you about today is the fact that you can't stop dunking on Broncos fans on Twitter.
Yeah, that happened right before I came on.
It did.
Yeah, there's a backstory here. So I believe he's still the main guy at Mile High Report. Obviously, I used to work for SB Nation, mm-hmm. and so I had a pretty friendly relationship with the people over at Mile High Report. Tim Lynch is the guy who runs it, or at least he used to. And he's a guy who is fine doing friendly trash talk. He doesn't take it personally. And so I started doing this like a year ago because Broncos fans love to talk smack. And so obviously you've seen it mm-hmm. over time. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got these really handy things online that can calculate the number of days between dates. Mm-hmm. And, it just so happens you can count the number of days between September 17, 2015, which was a long time ago, mm-hmm. and today. And that just so happens to be the last time the Broncos beat the Chiefs. I did that with the Chargers, too, and it was like 1,700 days. And so anytime I see Mile High Report or a Broncos fan that happens across my timeline that feels pretty frisky, I feel it's important to provide a public service and point out that it's been over 1,000 days since the Broncos beat the Chiefs. And they can talk about anything else they want. And what I tell them is it's the sports fan equivalent of, yeah, but back in high school, no one cares. No one cares. Oh, but the Chiefs have it. No one cares.
It's true.
Talk to me about what's happening now. Because what's happening now is the Chiefs are a better team than the Broncos. Everyone thinks so. Mm-hmm. And they have their franchise quarterback. The Broncos don't. Mm-hmm. Their defense is young. The Broncos' defense is getting older, and they're jettisoning their best players. Now, I don't want to hear about Marcus Peters right now, Josh, so don't you dare do that.
Okay, I'll hold it back.
Yeah, I'm just zip that in. And so I just feel it necessary to every now and then to remind them that when the the bloated Tebow, right?
Yes.
When Dontari Poe found Demetrius Harris in the back of the end zone, the Chiefs became the big brother in this rivalry.
Right.
And
I think that's fair.
That was the moment. And everyone knew it because that's the moment when Broncos players were relegated to talking about sportsmanship.
Right.
You know, oh, I can't believe they did that. That says a lot about them. No, it says a lot about you.
You're right. You got a Dontari Poe threw a touchdown pass against you. It says a lot about you.
Yeah, that says a lot more about you than it does about them. And so every now and then I just remind Broncos fans of that. Now, who knows what will happen this year? We never know. Nothing's predictive. But I do believe the Chiefs will continue to be a better team than the Broncos for a while. And it's all in good fun.
I'm hesitant to even steer in the general direction of anything you've actually written about, because I feel like now, like, I really enjoy talking to you about really every topic, but I'm a little bit afraid to ask you about Mitch Morse or the fact that you wrote about Justin Houston again.
I did write about Justin Houston again.
And, like, I'm a little bit worried. I'm worried that you've just lost your grip on, oh, never mind, hold on, I just checked, and it's July. You can write about whatever you want, and it means nothing, because it's July, and I'm just glad you're finding topics.
I just fill in time, man.
Right, no, I understand. Believe me. Why do I think we're having you on every week? Do you think we need you every week? I got to fill that time.
Exactly. So which do you want to talk about first, my son Mitch Morse or Justin Houston?
I want to wait on your adult son Mitch Morse, because I actually have, like, real questions in there. The Justin Houston thing, I completely admit, I didn't even realize you had written another piece, because I guess whenever you tweet about, like, oh, no, I've read what Seth's written about Justin Houston again, and then I clicked the page again today, like, oh, he should have had, like, two pieces come out since last time we talked. Oh, my goodness, it's more on Justin Houston. So I would like to know what inspired this piece, and then what is it about? I haven't even read it.
I decided to delve into the world of box score analysis because everyone else was doing it.
Sure, right.
And like my dad always said, if everyone else is doing it, you dive in with both feet.
Exactly. So, I love that. Great parental advice.
Oh, yes. It served me well. So, I mean, here's the deal. I keep trying to figure out why I'm having conversation after conversation about Justin Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And those conversations, 99% of the time, start with statistics. Now, not all the time. I had a great conversation with a host of another radio show where he's got concerns about film, and I've addressed that
a little
bit on Twitter.
You wash your mouth out with soap. You wash your mouth out with soap. That is absolutely. There are no other radio shows.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I'm sorry. It was just some random guy I happened to be talking to on the phone.
That's much better. That's much better.
That commercial break, it was the weirdest conversation I've ever had.
Seth, I swear, if you say a name that rhymes with Toady Cap on this radio station, I'm going to pop a cap right into this phone.
It was not my friend Cody that I talk to on the phone sometimes.
That makes it even worse.
Whatever he does with those conversations is none of my business, Josh. If he wants to call me and talk about the Chiefs, I'm a friendly guy. I'm not hard to contact. I'd give my number to a stranger, which that probably, again, says something about me.
But anyway, it does.
So the argument about Justin Houston, it really started, for one, when he got hurt, right? I mean, mm-hmm. The big contract and he got hurt. I get it. I really do. He got a huge contract and he got hurt in the tail end of the first year in the contract. Obviously, that's going to bother fans. Now, they are astute enough to realize that's not his fault.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the Chiefs, in my opinion, I'm not sure if that injury was handled the way it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Then it got exacerbated. It was a whole deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what really kept the debate going this last season is 9.5 sacks. Right?
Right?
Had Justin Houston had 13 sacks this last year, I don't think anyone's saying a word anymore.
Totally. Maybe you could still find the groups, and I might be above this, that's looking at, like, well, they're probably going to want to cut out of his deal here early because he's probably not going to be worth $20 million in 2020
right.
or whatever. But, like, that's reasonable stuff. There would be no unreasonable conversation to this extent. Yes.
Correct. Agreed. And now the conversation has become, well, Houston isn't what he was. And it's always that mystical 2014 where, you know, he shot bolts of lightning from his eyes and thunder from his rear. You know,
that's
people act as though he was a completely different player, and we'll talk about that if you want.
Sure.
So what I realized is when people are saying, wow, we should be concerned about Justin Houston, they're starting with an assumption. That assumption is that because he only had 9.5 sacks in 2017, that's unusual or bad. Or a reason to be concerned. And I realized that I was just giving people that.
Yeah.
I was just saying, oh, yeah, but look at the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always just giving them that. And I realized, wait a minute, how do I even know that's bad or unusual?
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I took a look at the top 20 pass rushers of all time. All Hall of Famers, I believe, every one of them. You know, start with Bruce Smith and working your way down,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
and I looked at the second year of their career through the ninth year of their career, because I wanted to throw out rookie seasons, because, you know, rookie years are rookie years.
Sure.
And I want to throw out declining years. And I say, okay, well, Justin Houston had 0.63 sacks per game, because, you know, he only played 15 games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how many of them, did any of them have years like that during their prime?
Mm-hmm.
And what I found out was, of the 20 that I looked at, 17 of them did. Of the 20 that I looked at, I believe it was 14 or 15, had multiple seasons like that.
Yep.
Did you know that Derek Thomas had two seasons in his prime where he recorded fewer sacks per game than Justin Houston did last year?
No.
I didn't know that.
No.
But when we talk about Derek Thomas, we talk about him, rightfully so, as an unstoppable force rushing the passer, and he was. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he forgot how to play football those 2 years.
Right.
Or he was suddenly a bad player. It demonstrates, and I mean, if you really, and it's in the article on The Athletic, that's my usual plug. Take a look at The Athletic. I think we're throwing some stuff out there that you won't get anywhere else, which, you know, that's kind of our job.
Right.
So, anyway, when you look there, I mean, you see that Michael Strahan had 5 years like that.
Yep.
Jared Allen had a couple years like that. Every single one of them, except Bruce Smith, Reggie White, and DeMarcus Ware, interestingly enough.
Yep.
And Reggie White had a season where he was at like 0.67, and he was right there on the edge. But every other pass rusher you can think of has had a year like that. And then what I also did is I took a look at his sack per game production since he came back from injury, because that's what everyone's saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not the same since he came back.
Right.
He's averaged 0.68 sacks per game since coming back from injury. During that same time frame, I had someone else compile a list of who they thought the best pass rushers were in the NFL. Because I didn't want to be accused of, you know, changing the numbers or stacking the deck. So it was a list of about 15 guys.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Houston was fifth on that list in sacks per game. Now remember, this is among the best in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
He's above Khalil Mack.
Yep.
Who everyone's like, well, no Khalil Mack.
Yep,
but, you know,
right.
And so he's below a few guys. He's below Miller, Bosa, Chandler Jones. And then I'm trying to remember off the top of my head who the fourth one was, and I can't.
JJ, it's sorted. I'm looking at it right now,
yeah,
but I don't know.
I sorted it very poorly, and that's my fault. And so,
thank you for saying very poorly, so I didn't have to say I was they missed something. Was it Ryan Kerrigan?
There was
it looks
no
like
rhyme or reason. I just listed guys.
Right, Ryan, and that's good for lists.
I could have stacked it top to bottom. So if you look at
I think
list
it's Ryan Kerrigan, though.
15,
I think.
Oh yeah, Ryan Kerrigan, who is perennially underrated
very,
as a pass rusher.
Yeah.
So here's the deal: when you look at that, those 15 guys or 12 guys or 13 guys, I cannot remember how many it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you average their production together and then throw out the bottom guy, because J.J. Watt, when healthy, because you know he's gotten injured and had to leave, but J.J. Watt's averaged 0.19.
Mm-hmm.
Now here again, that just goes to show with a small sample size. Stuff happens.
Yeah, of course.
And so, and then I look, and he is actually, even if you throw off the lowest guy, he is slightly above the average of the group of the quote-unquote best pass rushers in the game.
Right.
And this is with him coming back from an injury. This is with him rushing the passer. We talked about this on Lockdown Chiefs. That's just another group of guys that I occasionally have phone calls with that they may, you know, whatever they do.
It's a weird name for your group chat.
It is a weird name for my group chat. So we talked about this. He rushed the passer, according to Pro Football Focus, about 76% of the time last year.
Okay.
Von Miller did 93% of the time.
Wow! That makes me so mad.
Yeah, Khalil Mack is up there too. Now, the games I reviewed of Houston, I actually, and I think I review this a little bit differently. I've chatted with some other people. I look at snaps where Houston starts to rush the passer, but then stops and instead fills a passing lane or is clearly playing contain. I don't count those as a rush because he's not actually rushing the passer.
Sure.
I got over 32%.
Wow.
And so when you throw all this together, you realize this idea that people should be worried about Houston based on statistical production in 2017, they really shouldn't. Hall of Famers, almost all of them, have years like that, and that's because context matters with a pass rusher.
Yeah.
So it's an unusual direction for me to go because I'm not usually big into statistical analysis. But to me, if you really parse through the stats enough, you can find some useful information as to what's normal over time.
Right.
And so now if Houston has a second year in a row where he's, you know what, at 9, 9.5, we'll maybe talk about that a little bit differently, because that's still happened to quite a few of them, but not as many. And a lot will just depend on the context around him, though. Mm-hmm. If he's still only rushing the passer 75% of the time, I mean, that's bound to happen.
Right.
And so, and then the other thing I did, and I'm sure you saw, people keep saying that he's slower.
Yep.
And so I just took a GIF of him doing what you can call a crossover. You can call it an inside-outside fake. I don't really care about terminology. Maybe I should, but I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And it was him executing the same move in 2017 and 2014. Now, it was different context. In 2017, he was against Jason Witten. 2014, against a right tackle. But the move itself, fakey inside, outside, and then burst inside off the left leg, is mm-hmm. identical, right?
Yes.
And the point was to see, well, has he lost explosiveness or anything like that? So I put the two GIFs and I timed them kind of as best I could. I'm not a tech guy. Right next to one another. And I showed them to my wife because she's completely unbiased. She could not care less.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, she could not care less about this. And I asked her, hun, can you do me a favor? Look at these two on my new 55-inch screen. Which, by the way, if you don't review film on a 55-inch TV screen, you are missing out, man. It is so much better and easier.
It seems like it. And up to this point, I've been imagining you doing film review just like on the screen of an iPod Classic, just like somehow doing it from a watch. Like, I just, not even a smartwatch, just a normal watch.
Oh my goodness. Oh yeah, it was terrible. And so, but I mean, that's how I feel now. When if I even start to do a little bit of it on my computer, I'm like, oh, what is this? What am I, a peasant? So I put them next to each other, and I asked my wife, who has no dog in this fight, but
right.
is a very keenly observant person,
mm-hmm.
and she also wouldn't realize when the games were based on who they were playing, because mm-hmm. they only play Dallas every 4 years.
Right.
And my 10-year-old son figured that out immediately, but he wasn't in the room when I asked her the first
Not
time.
Not invited.
I said, yeah. I said, honey, which one of these do you think is from 2017, and which one is from 2014, just based on Justin Houston alone?
Mm-hmm.
I pointed out to her who Justin Houston is, which I swear she cares a little, but not much.
It's fine. We're not talking to her. At some point, I do want to just have your wife on for this segment instead, but I won't ask her to do a film review or anything.
Yeah, if we're ever in Kansas City and we do a live thing, I will totally bring my wife with me. And
fantastic.
It'll be hilarious.
It'll be funny because we'll finally have you in the, not just the studio, but the city, and I'm going to have no interest in talking to you.
Yeah, be like, yeah, this is great, which I'm very used to it. Most people that know my wife would rather talk to her anyway, so, including my own parents. This is how it goes. So I asked her, and she looked at it carefully because I told her this matters to me.
Right.
You know, marry a good woman. There's fair advice, because my wife, she really is a good woman. She's very patient.
I would have guessed as much.
Yeah, that's true. The story tells that. And she looked at it, and she points to the Dallas game.
Right.
And she goes, I think that one's from 2014. I said, well, why? She said, well, you know, it's 2017 now. You've been talking about him for a while, which means he's got to be getting close to 30.
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably a little slower. And he looks slower in the other one. She thought he looked slower in the Chargers game.
Right.
And so I was like, really? That's interesting. So I started showing that clip to football people who don't have a dog in the fight. And so I'm not going to name names because I don't want to drag anyone into some big debate about Justin Houston, because some people that have looked at that clip disagree and they say, oh, it's wildly different.
You're not dragging it into that. If they're in the mentions, they've cannonballed into the conversation. But
I have purposefully asked people via direct messaging. Because I'm not going to drag people into this big, long debate because no one has time for that.
Okay.
So I've asked four national analyst type guys I really respect, that whose work I've referenced, who I just respect the daylights out of them.
Sure.
Ask them real bluntly, do you see a difference in quickness or explosion in Houston in these two clips?
Mm-hmm.
And do you see a technical difference in these clips that would negate, you know, comparison?
Right.
And the answer to both was no. And so basically what they just told me was, no, he looks the same in both. He might look, a couple of them actually said, or maybe, no, it was just one of them said, he looks more spry in the Dallas clip.
Hmm.
So here's the deal. That's just one play.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
So one play doth not an argument make. And I'm more than prepared, if someone's willing to lay out some evidence to me that he's slower, I'm willing to listen. There were a couple games last year where I thought, nah, I don't know. He's not testing the edge as much.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I do know. If someone is slower, they're just slower.
Right.
They're not slower with the occasional play where they're suddenly not slower.
Right.
That's not how physical decline works.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my Justin Houston spiel that took up the vast majority of our time.
Yes, that's okay, though, because I think that the way that you ended up actually sort of giving up a little bit of ground in the war on box scores by doing it the way you did, I think is really smart and really useful, because you shouldn't be automatically conceding that this isn't a thing that happens to great pass rushers. And I think if there is a place where you could concede, like that feeling of, oh, man, I don't know, right now it seems like Houston's not testing that edge as much, I think in there you might have a moment of concern about the knee or about maybe his head in regarding what he's able to do and everything. But that doesn't mean that his top-end speed and explosiveness and quickness aren't there and aren't repeatable. And I think that's the false equivalence that a lot of people are making.
I would completely agree with that, because it agrees with me.
Woo! All right, that's good. We're good on that. All right, let's talk about Mitch Morse for a minute here while we can, Seth. Your adult son, your truest love. You did a film review of Mitch Morse, and I saw this literally just like, I don't know, an hour before the show started, so I just barely scanned through it. I'm a little bit afraid to see what you found out and if it was emotionally trying for you, evaluating your own flesh and blood this way.
Trying doing that type of thing. People that have read my work for a while know that I love the way Mitch Morse plays the game.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a great dude. And so somewhere along the way, this morphed into my 40-year-old son, Mitch Morse. So
and he's, just for clarification for everyone, not only is he not Seth's son, he's also not 40 years old.
I know, but, you know, he's got the beard.
No,
he
totally does.
He looked, I mean, you saw pictures of when he was 19, he looked older. He looked older than me.
100%.
Anyway,
100% agree.
Here's what I found with Morse. He was exceptional the first couple weeks against the Patriots and the Eagles. I mean, great against the Patriots. Was really, really good against the Eagles, against a really tough defensive front. I mean, that defensive line is terrifying. And he did a great job against them. And then he got hurt late in the Eagles game. Didn't come back until midseason. And he just – and so I reviewed those two games, and then I reviewed Buffalo and Dallas later on in the season. And here's the interesting thing. His loss percentage actually stayed pretty solid, actually good, later in the season when he came back. But his win percentage dropped to like a third of what it was. It went from like 28-29% to like 10%. And the reason for that, he just couldn't move the way he normally does. Mitch Morse is an exceptional athlete. He gets out into space really well, and the Chiefs rely on that in their run game with a lot of the combo blocks that they run, where he starts off on a defensive player and then, you know, gets to the second level. He also performs a lot of reach block, where he has to cross the face of a defender and cover a lot of ground quickly, and he just couldn't do it as well. He was still, because his hand placement's so good, because his leverage's so good, he was still able to keep from losing, but he wasn't winning. And I think that's one of the things that we saw, a difference in the run game. He just wasn't – he was a main cog in how that all worked early in the season, and he just wasn't able to do quite the same things. And so I actually posted a couple of clips, one in pass protection where he was helping out, and you saw that he got there just a split second slower, which allowed a pressure to occur. Now, he still got there in time to prevent a hit. He still got there in time to slow the guy down. And so it wasn't a terrible play, but it wasn't as good. And then there was another one where he got into space, and you could just see him moving differently. He clearly, clearly was gimpy.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he toughed it out, I really admire that. And so for me, the Mitch Morse that I'm expecting back is the one we saw in the first couple games of the season, and he was playing at a very, very high level. So that's what I found with my 40-year-old son, Mitch Morse.
Two questions. You've touched on both these already. One of them is explicitly stated in the article, but I want to make sure everybody knows the context of it. Question about sort of giving the importance of the loss percentage versus the importance of a win percentage in general in your offensive lineman evaluation. And then also, I think you just said as much, but do you expect Mitch Morse to go back to the low loss percentage and high win percentage whenever he's had a year to recover?
Okay, the most important thing when reviewing an offensive lineman, in my eyes, maybe other analysts would vary, is a loss percentage.
Right.
An offensive lineman winning on a snap does not guarantee success for the offense. An offensive lineman losing on a snap, it creates like a 50-50 shot that the play is going to fail.
Right.
It's catastrophic. And you just think of it this way. When a left tackle is blocking, for example, on a pass blocking play, if the left tackle makes a great, great block, that's nice, but it doesn't necessarily mean the play is going to be successful or even make it that likely. You think of Joe Thomas all those years in Cleveland, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had thousands and thousands of great blocks. However, if a left tackle gets blown by immediately by a quick, you know, edge rush, you are almost certainly leading that play to a disaster.
Right.
And so the loss percentage is by far the more important of the two. And what's really interesting to me is even as hobbled as he was, and I noticed, and I remember he was listed as a few things. He seemed like he was having problems with his left hand too.
Hmm.
Like
interesting.
After plays, you could see him. He wasn't right.
Right.
And so even when he was unhealthy and not moving like he normally does, the fact that he kept a very low loss percentage is really impressive to me. And then when he was healthy, I mean, he never lost on run plays. It happened like a couple times in two games. It was really impressive. And, yes, I expect him to be back. I expect him to be healthy. And another big thing that you see when you review his film, he is constantly talking to the rest of the line.
Hmm.
He is clearly, you know, the center's supposed to call out protections and all that stuff. He seems like he has got that stuff down. And that's one reason, in my opinion, and I wish Zach Fulton the best. I think he played extremely well last year at center. He really did great. But I do think you noticed a little bit of a pickup in problems with regards to blitzes, stunts, twists, that kind of thing, because I don't think Fulton was quite as adept as Morse is. So I'm excited for that because you know who could really use a very adept center when it comes to calling out protections? A first-year starter at quarterback.
Sorry, that implies that Patrick Mahomes might not be literally already a fully formed NFL starting quarterback, so I'm not willing
That's
to accept
solid.
That.
You know what? That's a solid point. I was trying to bring all roads back to Patrick Mahomes, and I failed. And I'm ashamed.
One more quick thing on Morse, and then something slightly off topic before we let you go. And if the answer to this is not at all, then please say so. But how much less concerned are you made by the left guard spot if there is a healthy Mitch Morse next to whoever that left guard ends up being?
I am less concerned about it. And you know the fact that I'm assuming it's going to be Witzman or Iyengar.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they've got yet another year within the system should help. Now,
agreed.
That can't account for everything, but it should help. It does make me less concerned.
And then I know that you've said that you'll have a film review out unbelievably quickly if this happens, but in the last day before the NFL supplemental draft, how are you feeling about the possibility of the Chiefs making a move to address their cornerback spots?
I would absolutely love it. That is one of the two primary concerns I have about the team,
yep.
And they have a very unusual chance to pick up a very talented player. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of the supplemental draft.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what kind of contract length happens. Maybe you would know. Maybe it's based on the tender that you put forth.
I think it follows very closely to an average rookie deal, but I don't know 100%.
Sure. Well, and I'm just thinking length of contract.
Uh-huh.
Because you want to be careful. You don't want to give up a second-round pick to pick up a guy for only a year.
Oh, no. And it would not be.
Okay, so if that's the case, and I believe you, because everyone should always believe you, Josh.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Then if that's the case, a guy like Sam Beal, based on people I really respect, now again, I haven't reviewed his film at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably not going to be able to help myself, and I might review a little bit. But I've told people, until the Chiefs take him, I'm just not going to do that.
Sure.
Because
sure.
My time is finite. So this is a unique chance. I mean, I know Matt Miller said he thinks he's the best player to ever enter the supplemental draft in terms of no off-field issues, great player in college, would have definitely been a top-tier corner, maybe not a first-rounder, but a second-rounder or a third-rounder at least, considered a guy who maybe could start out of the gate.
Yep.
And the Chiefs, hey, they've got this big need, and hey, they've got an extra second-round pick.
Go ahead.
It seems like everything's coming together. Josh.
Yes. Yes, it does. There would be something kind of beautiful about them using the Marcus Peters pick to bring in a somewhat troubled corner, although, again, Sam Beal's not a total basket case. But that is kind of fun. Also, the position is the more perfect symmetry. And then also, he can challenge for a starting job now. But, like, for whatever you think about David Amerson being a decent one-year option or Steven Nelson, who's in a contract year, right? Am I making that up?
Yes.
Neither of those guys are offering you any sort of long-term help as of right
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
Sam Buell can.
Exactly. And here's the deal. The best-case scenario for Amerson and Nelson is that Nelson plays like he did in 2016
mm-hmm.
or like he did down the stretch last year. I think he's going to have a good year.
Sure.
And then the other best-case scenario is that Amerson unlocks that 2015 version of himself and has right. a really good year. If both of them have good years, they're going to be expensive.
Yes, of course.
And I mean that, you know, you have a rookie or a rookie contract quarterback, so you can, you know, fiddle around with that a little bit. But that's a position you want as many young guys competing
yes.
as possible. Steven Nelson's existence and possibility as a solid starter is there because they doubled down
yep.
on picking him when they picked Marcus Peters. Yep. And man, we're all pretty glad now they did.
Absolutely.
Even if he's only average, if he weren't there, they'd be like, whoa, what's going to happen now? Another year of Philip Gaines or something.
Yeah, 100%. Also, this is just a quick Google, but like whenever the Browns drafted Josh Gordon, it was for a 4-year deal that they signed him to right afterwards.
Okay, that makes me feel a lot better.
Yes.
And so I assume it's probably because of the round you pick or whatever it is. So I would love it. I know there's another guy, Adonis Alexander, I think,
uh-huh. yep.
that is considered a little more of a project.
Yep.
I guess to me, hey, great, because I trust Brett Veach, but I would love to see them go after Beal aggressively mm-hmm. and say, hey, you should look, man, you've got a shot here, if not to start, to get some playing time and force Nelson and Amerson to earn it.
100%. I have more thoughts about it, but I'll just tease everyone next that I'll keep talking about it, because good Lord, you've overstayed your welcome today, Seth.
I have.
It's always great to talk to you. Thank you for making all this
time. It's always good talking to you.
Seth Kaiser of The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan. Read all of his stuff on The Athletic, dang it. He doesn't hang out here for 37 minutes for you to not read his stuff on The Athletic. Do it! I'll talk more about Sam Beal and Nelson Alexander whenever we come back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Good chicken is worth the money. I'm glad we could talk about this.
This is really, and it's all kind of analogous to good chicken is worth the money. So is good Chiefs writing.
On 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, and the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
All right, so I had more thoughts about all the supplemental draft stuff, but there's no reason to keep Seth here as a prisoner to hear me talk about it, because that's what most of the show is me just doing this without a captive audience. Even Beards takes off his headphones sometimes. So let's start the conversation here with kind of the wide view. Not only do the Chiefs will the Chiefs be better off having a short-term solution, a guy who you could plug in and feel good about if they draft Sam Beal, if they use the second-round bid essentially on him. Again, we talked about this very briefly with Seth, just sort of the strangeness of how the supplemental draft all works, and if there are a couple of teams in the same range that want a guy, then it gets messier, and we haven't had to understand this very well in the past because we haven't had a supplemental draft with this much talent in it. Honestly, there could be three guys drafted. Sam Beal is absolutely going to be. I would think at this point, Adonis Alexander probably will be. Honestly, I wouldn't be terribly offended if the Chiefs put in, if they say, you know what, let's do a third and a sixth on Beal and Alexander, and they get them both. Like, this is fine with me. It's pre-training camp stuff. It hasn't cost you a lot of time. But Sam Beal is especially interesting because he can step in now. But even Alexander, as we talked about with Seth a little bit, both of those guys give you a little bit of an actual plan for the future in a way that the Chiefs just don't have right now with their cornerbacks. David Amerson's a one-year deal. Steven Nelson's in a contract year. If either of them are good enough to be brought back next year, other teams are also going to be interested. And they're going to have to pay Kendall Fuller. They're going to have to keep giving money throughout this team. Now, again, the rookie contract of Patrick Mahomes gives you a lot of wiggle room. But a lot of that wiggle room was eaten up to bring in Sammy Watkins, which is a move that, again, I'm totally cool with. I'm glad that they made. But that's the concern, and that's the reason you've got to have value from your young guys. It's why Tano Passanio and Breland Speaks need to be here to replace Dee Ford and Tom Bahali this year. Those are moves that you have made or will make, and hopefully will make sooner rather than later as those guys continue to grow. It's probably the most underratedly important part of the NFL draft. You've got to have guys that can step in and be values. And we talk about value on this show all the time. But the value here is it just could not be more important. And you have a chance to make up for what I would argue was a mistake in not addressing the cornerback spot in the draft. And I'm guessing that the Chiefs were aware of Adonis Alexander and Sam Beal, and they are certainly very aware of both of them now. At this point, I would be disappointed if we don't at least hear that the Chiefs put in a bid on these guys. They offered up a pick. Now, if they put in a third and a sixth on Beal and Alexander, respectively, and a worse team does the same, or another team does a round better in either of those spots, I would be pretty okay with just knowing that the Chiefs did the evaluation and said, you know what, this is what he's worth. Anything more than that is overpaying, both for the short term and long term, in a harmful way. My hope is that other teams are going to let these guys pass through because they're supplemental draft picks. I'm guessing that Brett Veach is very interested in having 2 second-round picks and a first next year. I'm guessing he likes the flexibility that would bring by not using one of that second-round pick now. So I would say that right now, at this point, I would be equal parts a little bit surprised if they spent a second on Beal and if they didn't address these guys at all. Either of those directions would surprise me a little bit. And we'll get into some of the more specifics here in a second. We went way long with Seth, so now Beards is worried that we're going to run out at the end of the show, which is something that we've done a couple of times recently. Also something we've done with Seth recently. So let's get out of here. We'll be back in just a second to break down a little bit more of the specifics of both of those guys and also what Matt Miller of Bleacher Report said regarding Sam Beal coming to the Chiefs.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Whoa!
With Joshua Briscoe.
Daddy's always happy.
On ESPN Kansas City.
So out of context like that, that's Gordon Hayward, by the way, being sad about the fact that he's having another girl.
Hey now. It's being slow. Just remember.
Daddy's always happy.
You know who Gordon Hayward sounds like? He sounds like Charlie. Play that again.
Daddy's always happy.
Just a tinge.
Just enough that when you play it the first time, I thought, wait a second, were they doing a thing where Charlie was saying it, but there was too much echo? All right, I promised you a little more on the supplemental draft front. We'll obviously talk about this more tomorrow, and I don't actually know what time the supplemental draft happens because it's the supplemental draft and it's not televised. Oh, I would absolutely watch it. The two guys that we're talking about are Sam Beal and Adonis Alexander, and Sam Beal is the guy that's going to be a higher pick. He played at Western Michigan, and he's probably going to be worth a second or third round pick. As we mentioned earlier, the Chiefs have an extra second-round pick next year from Marcus Peters. And Matt Miller of Bleacher Report wrote this about Sam Beal and the teams interested in him. I found this very interesting. Whichever team claims him will forfeit a 2019 draft pick of the corresponding round, so where can Beal expect to land? Inside NFL front offices, talk centers around the Buffalo Bills, Cleveland Browns, and Kansas City Chiefs. The Bills and Browns own plenty of 2019 draft capital, so they could exchange a future pick for Beal. The Chiefs own 2 second-round picks in next year's draft. They could put in a claim for Beal and still own the Los Angeles Rams' pick as a part of the Marcus Peters trade. Could the Chiefs replace Peters with Beal in the supplemental draft? Many front office people say Beal is the right fit for their scheme and falls in line with the type of aggressive moves general manager Brett Veach has been making. Yes, please. Sign me up, please. Yes, please. Thank you. And again, I have to admit that I haven't done any insane deep dive into the film of Sam Beal or Adonis Alexander, but I have been very clear about how I have concerns about the cornerback position. And Seth, I actually wanted to ask him about this, and then I forgot that he said it until just now. Seth mentioned that corner is one of the two places that he has some concern about on this roster. I think it's one for me. I might have a little bit somewhere. I think actually for Seth it might have been interior defensive line. I'm not sure because I think we talked about that. I'm not as worried about it. I don't know. I could be making that up on Seth's behalf. But I'm not worried about anything half as much as I'm worried about the corners. Yeah, the pass rush concerns me a little bit because I feel pretty good about Justin Houston, but I don't know what D Ford's coming back from an injury, what he's going to look like. I don't know what Breland Speaks or Tanner Passion you are, but at least the Chiefs have 4 guys that we just mentioned there that could actually be a part of a better, improved pass rush. The corners are my biggest fear. And they're not just my biggest fear for this year. They're my biggest concern long-term with this team. We talked about maybe them signing Rashad Breland because he couldn't keep his contract because he failed a physical. He had a non-football injury or something that was strange. I'm not as excited by that idea as I am about the idea of bringing in Sam Beal, because he's here to improve the team this year and also for the next 3 or 4 years at a super valuable position. It's an incredibly valuable position and one of those places where if you can get that value, you're going to be playing with a lead as far as the salary cap goes. You don't worry so much about Justin Houston's cap number if you've got your starting corners on the rookie deals still, and also your slot guy in Steven Nelson. He's got 1 year left. But if you've got Beal and you've built a defense on all of these rookie contracts, you can, and it's the pass rushers that we just mentioned. It's Speaks and Passanio, and it's Fuller opposite Beal, and it's paying money to Anthony Hitchens in the middle, but beside Reggie Ragland, who is on a good contract, and it's Derek Nnadi on a rookie deal, and Xavier Williams on a reasonable contract, and then you can afford to pay Chris Jones because you've got all this value everywhere else. They're doing it with the safety position a little bit. Obviously, Eric Berry is a big price tag, but they cut Ron Parker and now have a little bit of a mix up with a bunch of the other guys. They're gonna plug them in and find the places for them. The Chiefs have a really stunning option here to get for a second round value and maybe a third. A guy who can help you in the immediate and also dramatically improve your long-term forecast for one of your most important positions. I won't be beside myself if someone overpays. If someone gives up a first or if a worse team gives up a second, I could probably talk myself into it. If the Chiefs don't make a bid on either of these guys, I'll be concerned. As we talked about with Seth, Adonis Alexander is a lower value guy, a more of a project guy out of Virginia Tech, but the Chiefs were one of four teams to talk to him. One of four. And his issue appears to be weed. And since it's 1920, I'm good with it. I'm not afraid that this NFL football player and adult man may use marijuana. I'm okay with it. Not a huge concern. So I think we're going to be in a really interesting place tomorrow whenever we hear the news about what happened in the supplemental draft. As of right now, if I had to make a call, I'd say the Chiefs are going to make some sort of attempt to bring in one of these guys. And at this point, I'd be thrilled if they made it happen. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Bye, Mom!
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.